frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground, another pirate station.
You're listening to WORT Madison.
We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our station in the fight. Straight from the base.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good, so good. I got a year. Wow, I feel nice. A sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us as always, from parts unknown, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Also consisting of parts unknown.
No, that's me. I got the cadaver knee.
Oh, that's right. You do have the cadaver knee.
I have a part unknown in there.
I was told that today is no pants day.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
That's
the official. So I'm here. The official. But I just want to let you know I'm not wearing any underwear, so.
I'm surprised you're here at all.
Mind reels.
Yeah, our pal Tom Jones from the staff here, the technical and facilities director.
Sure.
Official name.
Yep.
And he sent us an email saying it's National No Pants Day. Does that mean Mel is flying solo today?
Yeah. So, yep.
But so.
Well, I'm just going commando. So
that's we'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Who wants to check?
Nah, I'll pass.
Oh, so how you doing?
I didn't realize there was a National No Pants Day.
There's a National Everything
There's
Day.
There's a National Everything. Is there a National No Trump Day? Every day is National No Trump Day.
I wish. Someday.
I like his new. I like his new persona that he's evolving.
Wait, before we start the show,
Grinch. But go ahead. Yeah,
he is turning into the Grinch.
Yeah,
he's before we start the show, I think we should go around the studio and you should tell me how wonderful I am and what a great job I've been doing this week and how proud you are.
Oh, screw that.
To be working with me.
Wow.
Did you see the cabinet meeting?
Yes, I know.
I'm from North Korea. Yeah.
There's a famous story when Comrade Stalin was giving a speech and everyone jumped up and was enthusiastically applauding. And then they were applauding, and then they were applauding, and then they were applauding, and they were applauding. And
no
then
one wants to be the first.
Somebody thought, wait, whoever's the one that shows less enthusiasm is going to be out of here, off like a prom dress.
They're still clapping.
And they're still clapping it. I think it went on for like 20 minutes, and finally, some comrade from 1918
just
or something
dead.
Said, yeah, I'm like, I got to sit down, man. Gone the next day.
I miss the old days of the Soviet Union when their premiers would like drop dead every three or four months.
Bring him out on a dolly.
Yeah. And drop off. He's going to drop off. Yeah.
Well, they were doing that with, of course, with Biden towards the end. You know, those little stands they use for mannequins?
Yeah.
You know, kind of hold them up. Poor guy. I still can't get over that. I'm going to say I'm one of those people. I'm one of those people that I was literally mad at our former president and his handlers, because I thought that's what those people do. That's what that lying and that you know, false fronts.
What do you mean?
I'm angry that they pretended like there was nothing wrong and he was perfectly fine. And,
right. Yeah.
You know, people say he doesn't have these faculties, but man, when you look away, he's great. You know, it's like, wait.
You should see. it's like one of those 3D posters. You got to kind of look out of the corner of your eye. Yeah.
But I mean, that's, I think more than anything else,
yeah,
to basically be, to have a propaganda machine that is lying about the capability of the person who's one of the most powerful people in the world. I mean, that really does kind of demoralize people,
sure,
I think.
Sure, sure. So, well, also, it's not reading the room. I mean, you know they can get away with it with Trump because he's been like that for a long time. And, well, seriously, I mean, he says this word salad, and people say, "Well, we're parsing his words, trying to decide, you know, what that means as far as policy. Well, it means nothing because it's like a flatulence.
There's a whole networks that are devoted to like those ancient, they were looking at the livers, the entrails of sheep and try to figure out like, oh, I think he really means that, you know. So when you pay millions of dollars to people to do that, they do it.
Yeah, but I mean, the Biden people should have realized that they can't get away with that, and it's gonna come out at some point, and it did during the debate. Yeah. And
sad,
you know. I mean, he would have been so smart to after he got elected. This is hindsight, but
I was saying
at the time, it's like say I'm gonna be a one-term president.
Right.
I'll be 82 when time comes for re-election, and I'm just going to do the best job I can.
I'm going to do a Millard Fillmore on this.
James K. Polk.
exactly. Got everything done and gone.
Polk did get everything done.
He grabbed
half of the continent.
He did. He was very successful.
Not going to say it was
as a horrible president.
Ethical. Oh, that's all ours too now.
Little Hickory.
but I mean that would have done a million things. It would have gotten people more energized. You wouldn't have that baggage of all this guy's old and dragging us down. You would have had a real, you know, primary season.
Yeah.
I mean,
so
I don't know.
And you're right. Well, one thing that I was happy to see this week is that apparently there's a certain court jester in the court of Trump who's not doing so well these days. It's just President Trump's had his little worm tongue there, Elon Musk, who was doing all this work for him. Did you ever notice that Doge backwards is E-God? is there something to that I didn't notice? I don't know. But numbers have started to come out on all of this efficiency that he was promising us. I mean, they were talking originally about saving $2 trillion. There was going to be $2 trillion in savings from all the nonsense they were doing. And then they scaled it back to $1 trillion, which, that's significant. But $1 trillion even seems pretty problematic. And now, as best as people can tell, there's been about 15% of that $1 trillion is maybe being saved. But, of course, there's so many errors and confusions and purposeful obfuscations that are going on here. And one group that's called the Partnership for Public Service looked into what's going on with all of these firings and agency lockouts and building seizures and so on. Almost all of them wound up in court. So actually, whatever savings they may have got, that $150 billion or whatever, the tiny bit that they said they even acknowledged saving, that's probably going to be eaten up in court costs.
But here's the thing that happens when you fire people illegally.
Yeah. Here's the thing. He was at the cabinet meeting, the one where they were all, you know, kissing the ring or whatever thing that they were kissing. It was interesting because they asked Elon how he was doing. He was there and, he said he was going to slash $1 trillion. He's still saying that. And he, talking about word salad, he said, I think it's possible to do that, but it's a long road to go. And, you know, it's really difficult. It's sort of how much pain are the cabinet and is Congress willing to take? Because it can be done, but it requires dealing with a lot of complaints. Basically, the best estimate is he's realized about 15% of what he said he was going to, that he scaled back to do. And now, of course, it turns out that that's not even really what's going on.
Well, I mean, they were totally unsupervised. I mean, of course, they're going to say, we did this incredible job. So
sure.
Just trust us.
Just big balls alone, probably.
Yeah.
And then this week, the other shoe dropping was this week, the chair of the Tesla board of directors. And you just got to love this because what else is this person going to say? Basically, her name is Robin Denholm, and she said she denied that they were looking for a replacement for Elon Musk. Apparently, the CEO of Tesla is Elon Musk, and the board is highly confident in his ability to continue executing on the exciting growth plan ahead.
Oh, that's the kiss of death. Clean out your desk.
I got to tell you, who said that they thought that he was going to be ousted was the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
As spokesman for the journal, in response to the board president's comments, said that we stand by our reporting. After the company reported a 71% drop in quarterly profits, Musk promised to spend more time at Tesla. But, of course, the problem with that is he's a damaged product now.
Yeah. So.
Not sure spending more time is what they really want. Could you spend less time, please? So that gave me a little bit of schadenfreude.
He can't leave to spend more time with his family because he doesn't know who they are.
He's got to get a monorail and go around the city at various stops. And
all right, 15 minutes here, Mr. Musk.
Yeah, baby mama 13 coming up. Ding, ding. Pull the bell.
He's the perfect monorail salesman.
I mean. He is. Yeah. Monorail. Were you sent here by the devil? No good, sir. I'm on the level.
Well, I don't want to do a lot of Trump stuff this week.
But I had to get that.
But you kind of have to.
I had to get the Musk thing in. I really was feeling a little bit of, like, you know, that evil joy that we feel when people like Musk.
Well, it's like the end of the James Bond movie when the Skull Island collapses, you know. And everybody cheers in the audience.
Exactly. Are you saying he's like Dr. Evil or something?
No,
I mean, what are you saying here?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't.
Scorpio.
Say it. I wouldn't say it. I did like too. Speaking of the cabinet meeting where they all had like kiss the ring, as you say, and that Waltz guy, he must not have done a good job of it because he got canned like about 6 hours after.
Well,
that.
Here's the thing.
But then they shuttled him over to the UN.
But here's the thing. Okay, so imagine the lineup. And imagine Trump is the person who's looking at the lineup. So you got Hegseth, who looks awesome with his shirt off, and then you get Walls next to him. Who's Trump gonna pick? I mean, the tattoos alone are gonna keep Hegseth in his job. Sure. So I mean, that's the high level of thinking that that President Trump is involved with.
Right. So Hegseth, did you ever notice he doesn't talk about the soldiers or personnel?
No.
He talks about warriors.
Yeah,
that's
that
he they loves it, that. Loves to talk about their warriors.
This is all very atavistic. That's the whole idea.
Well, it was like there was another one of these executive orders signed this week about how they were going to give pro bono legal counsel to police who are involved in controversies over, I assume shootings and things like that.
Sure.
But they prefaced it by talking about how important the police were, that they protect people and that they're so tough. It's
whatever.
I guess I'm so macho. Yeah.
It is, and it's like I don't know. It's just like we're in the Wayback Machine in so many ways. It's like this is just this is what they want.
Well, speaking of the Wayback Machine,
way back.
when is it? June 14th, I think it is.
Oh, you mean President's Day?
Yeah, the President's Day. So the Army is planning a parade for Donald Trump's birthday.
Oh my Lord.
Now, he wanted this his first term, and they talked him out of it because they said it would be expensive and that the tanks would, like, tear up the streets in Washington.
They'll probably use FEMA money for
it.
No,
they don't care anymore. Yeah. But the Army parade plans for Trump's birthday call for 7,000 soldiers, 150 vehicles, and 50 helicopters.
Mm.
So it's going to, I don't know what it's going to cost. $10 million? $100 million? I forget. Those numbers are all kind of made up anyway, but he's always wanted a big military parade to show off and that he can lord over and
lord above. Oh, by the way, speaking of kingly things, I saw today that King Charles III is going to be coming to Canada. You know, officially, the British monarch is also the king or queen of Canada.
Sure.
And so the new prime minister, to emphasize the fact that Canada is nobody's sweetheart, said, could you come and open our parliament? It's the first time it's happened in over 50 years. And the king was like, you bet. So they're going to, I think it's the end of May. Normally the viceroy, the governor general, opens that on behalf of the monarch.
Yeah.
But just to emphasize, we are a separate country.
They're not the 51st state?
It turns out they're not. That's I know that's a surprise for many
I know
many
that's
people.
How the voting turned out this week. That Trump magic touch of killing everything that he touches.
He's like King Midas.
A casino? That's great. People just come and give you money. It's impossible to lose money at a casino.
It's belly up. A little lily on its grave. Yep.
He's failed at casinos. Sure. Where the business model really is people come and just give you money. Right. He's failed at selling steaks to Americans, vodka to Americans.
Yeah. How could you fail to sell steak and vodka?
Steak and booze and gambling. I mean,
it's the trifecta. Here's the thing about it. I mean, this is why I say sometimes, you know, Donald Trump, traitor and oath breaker. I mean, he's obviously an oath breaker because he's not following the Constitution of the United States. But the traitor part, I mean, he's giving our enemies everything they want. He's destroying this country.
Sure.
You would think that, like, conservatives would look at this and say, oh, my gosh. But that's where you start to see it's some kind of weird cult or something.
Yeah,
it's like people whose whole idea is one of honor and strength and all those things. Yeah, it's they'll march him down the street. But, you know, hey, why don't we get rid of the thing that stops, you know, the Russians from spying on us or whatever. We don't have enough money for that anymore, apparently. So, any rate.
RFK Jr. has led the movement to shut down the HHS federal lab that studies the world's most dangerous germs. It's called the Integrated Research Facility. Mm. It's one of the few labs in North America where scientists can safely study pathogens like Ebola, and they're shutting that down because we've got no interest in knowledge anymore. Apparently,
again, he's obviously on the side of the microsphere here. He's obviously he obviously decided some time ago that microscopic entities are his friends, and that he's rooting for the bacteria and the viruses.
I did see a story this week. I didn't bring it up, but where he was questioning the whole concept of germ theory.
Oh yeah.
So
okay.
He's just asking questions, I guess.
So this is, again, this is the thing. I just feel like civilization went up this hill, and it just, like, the train stalled out. We're just like going right back down the hill.
Chug, chug, chug
backwards. I mean, Louis.
I think I can. No, I can't.
Louis Pasteur was, like, a great savior of humankind. And now, here we are, you know, 150 years later or something. And it's like, whatever.
Yeah. That's not what I heard on TikTok.
Yeah, right. Cases of whooping cough are rising.
I see that.
Yep. It says there were 8,485 cases reported in 2025. This is according to preliminary data from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which, by the way, will not be giving us those numbers again in the near future. That's twice as many cases as last year at this time. The rates of whooping cough, or pertussis, as it's formally called, soared last year, which experts said wasn't unexpected. And part of course, is those useless masks. It turns out when you take them off, people spread diseases more readily.
A Florida school has a tuberculosis case.
No, you can so.
Thank you, Florida. That's a high school in Broward County.
Got it from a gator. Stop French kissing the gators. It's Florida. By the way, the president of Finland, I don't know if you saw this, you know, I did like that outrageous outfit that the president wore to the Pope's funeral. That was kind of fun.
The blue suit?
Yeah, it's like, okay, let's, you know, again, this is the classic thing. Whatever the leader does is bold and individualistic. And, of course, Obama wore a tan suit one time, and they pretty much crapped and fell back in it. You know, I'm just kind of like...
Where's my fainting couch?
Yeah, my fainting couch. Exactly.
Miss Lindsay was...
the vapors. But apparently he talked to both the president of Ukraine when he was there. That's President Trump did. And he also talked to the president of Finland. And someone who knows a lot about trusting the Russians... are the Finns.
Yeah.
There's a park in central Helsinki. I've had the privilege of being there. That is like the three major wars they had to have to keep the Russians out. They still lost some territory, by the way, in that war. And he listened to the guy, the president of Finland's, his name is Stubb, President Stubb, great name. And the thing that makes me think that maybe he did listen to him, Stubb is 6'2", and he's a marathoner and a triathlete.
Oh.
He speaks fluent English, and most importantly, he plays at a near professional level in golf. He actually competed in the Finnish national team. So for some strange reason, that ticked all the boxes for our pathetic president, pathetic man-child. And so he was actually listening to him. So the president of Finland was telling him, you know, look, this guy, he plays a cat and mouse. We've seen this a million times. The only thing that Putin understands is power. And there's a wonderful quote because, of course, you know, Russia has a 835-mile border with Finland. And there's been, besides the wars, major wars, since the 1300s, there's been like 30 wars or skirmishes with Russia. So President Stubb said, I mean, I love this. There's a reason why Finland has one of the strongest militaries in Europe, and it's not Sweden.
Oh, funny.
So apparently, if you get a tall, good-looking athletic guy who
golfer.
Plays killer golf, Trump will listen to him. I think, progressives, listen up.
Got to massage that message. So.
Yeah,
yeah. Remind me, I love reading the history of that, of the, like, the 1800s,
sure.
especially involving Russia.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's so interesting. But I love the part where Sweden would just come and kick their ass every once in a while. It's like, and they were terrified of Sweden. It's like, they get a bunch of guys together and come in with pikes or something and just blast through Russia.
Well, that's why Peter the Great, engaged in his process of modernization in the early 1700s.
Sure.
Because all these other countries, they didn't have nearly the landmass or the resources. The Russians could never organize themselves.
Yeah.
They could never get it together to take all that vast, manpower and wealth and do anything with
it. They're still doing it. I mean, they're just throwing bodies at Ukraine.
Yeah,
and they don't really care.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I saw that
the world's biggest hillbilly country, as I always say.
I saw that the Russian military was going into health clubs and scooping up men who were, like, working out. You know, it's like, that guy looks like he can handle a rifle.
I still follow a guy that escaped, this guy Nikita Proshkin, and he lives now in Vietnam. He was one of the young men who just basically, he got the last minute, he got alerted that they were like picking people up at the bus station or whatever.
He
just went down to Georgia and left, and he has not gone back since.
Wow.
But he has a site, he monetizes his experience. He has a site on YouTube. You can watch him living. He loves living in Vietnam, apparently.
Oh, cool.
Which, by the way, this was the 50th anniversary this last week of the fall of Saigon, April 30th, 1975. And they had a big celebration there. The Chinese were there. Everybody was there. And Trump administration had said, don't send any high level people. But actually, they did send one of the people at the embassy, even though it wasn't the ambassador to be there, because it was kind of a snub not to.
Sure.
And the poor Vietnamese, they're just kind of like, okay, you guys, please buy our stuff. You know,
I mean, they're just
like, be nice to us. You know, we're that's all we ask for. People getting pictures taken in front of the statues of Ho Chi Minh and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I vividly remember when Saigon fell. Me and a friend drew a giant mural of the troops coming into Saigon, on the bathroom wall of the dorm where I was. We were so proud of ourselves. We loved the fact that they renamed the city Uncle Ho the Great City. We thought that was hysterical. Everything about it was, like, just funny. And we thought that was great. And the bad thing was that our what we call corridor advisors at the University of Kentucky, he was like, you guys have to paint over that. They didn't want this.
Sure.
It was like something from the Sistine Chapel, except, cartoon form.
Yeah.
We were so proud of it, but we had to paint it over, so.
Man's always stepping on your throat.
Man is stepping on your throat, exactly.
Yeah, so the Attorney General, Pam Bondage, this week said that, is that her name?
Yeah, it might as well be.
She was talking about the fentanyl. I think this actually came out of the cabinet meeting we mentioned.
Sure.
She was talking about the fentanyl seizures at the border.
Yeah.
And she said that they have They have saved the lives because of Donald Genius Trump. They have saved the lives. First of all, she said of 118 million Americans.
Oh, okay.
And then, but then that was like one day. Then the next day.
Is that how many people are on fentanyl?
Well, then the next day she said, we have saved 258 million Americans' lives.
There's 300 million Americans.
Yeah, I know. She apparently doesn't. But 258 million Americans were saved by the efforts of the Attorney General.
I guess if you assume that every American is secretly a drug fiend, then I guess that makes sense.
Well, everybody they know is. They don't even try to make their lies plausible anymore.
No,
I mean,
why bother?
Well, because they know they can say that, and then the media will just repeat it. And even if it's if they do it sarcastically, they still get that out there in the bloodstream they've saved millions of lives by doing this.
Yeah. And Uncle Ferd's going to repeat it 5 million times.
Yeah, exactly. So.
The Trump administration, just to put a little icing on the cake here, is planning to terminate a $56 million annual grant program that distributes doses of Narcan.
Yeah.
Did you hear about this? Then trains emergency responders and communities to administer them. And of course, Narcan is the opioid overdose reversal medication that has saved so many lives. So they're interested in saving 250 million lives, but apparently the lives of people who have suffered from opioid addiction that could be saved through a medication like this is basically the funding for that program has been thrown aside. So,
you know, in my darker moments, I entertain the idea that they're just trying to thin the herd. I mean, that they're trying to kill as many people as possible to make their version of society more or less functional.
Well, the problem is whenever you are in a devil worship cult, there's always a practical question of what are you getting out of this? I know the hate is fun, you know, and all the people that you hate are going to be punished.
Yeah.
But, you know, the whole thing with the devil is everybody gets punished, right? I mean, everybody's going to be living in hell. So the ephemeral pleasure of making the liberals squirm or whatever it is you want is over pretty fast when they start doing stuff like this.
Well, I love the Marie Antoinette type comment Trump made this week when they were asking him about shortages on shelves, you know, because of because of the tariff, because of Joe Biden, and he said, well, yeah, now your kid used to have 30 dolls, now they'll get two that maybe cost a little bit more, so we get to choose doll A or doll B for Christmas this year. I guess.
Actually, he obviously doesn't know what it's like to have a child A.
You already have a doll. Yeah, right. Yeah, but the two dolls, they have to be like Chucky and that one from the trilogy of terror with Karen Black.
Yes, I mean. yes. Oh, man.
Speaking of gaslighting here, Peter Navarro, the trade expert or whatever his title is.
The chief gaslighter.
Chief gaslighter. There was some negative news, negative economic news this week.
I heard that
the economy was shrinking like 3% or something. Yeah, he said that's actually good news for the economy. So.
Well, I got to tell you the truth, it actually is good news for the environment. Well, you know, I mean,
it's always that trade-off.
One thing
COVID was too.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's definitely the case that there'll be something positive.
You know what? That all those things like COVID and economic slowdowns and the environment having a positive effect to things like that.
Yeah,
we're the virus, aren't we?
Yeah, we are definitely the virus. I went to a presentation once that was talking about afforestation in Wisconsin, and the biggest thing that helped the reforesting of Wisconsin was the Great Depression.
Sure.
It turns out that all these farms, so many farms went belly up at the same time. Banks didn't claim them, and they were just fallow land. And so, you know, wilderness recovered a lot of what had been.
Oh, really?
Yeah, previously had been. I saw this guy that was doing the presentation. It was something I went to see. And the guy was doing the presentation had a map of, like, you know, cultivated land in Wisconsin in like 1920 and then cultivated land in Wisconsin in 1940. And of course it was just like night and day because all these farms had you know, stalled out during the Depression.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So I raised, the thing that was funny was there were some people in the room that were business people. And so I raised my hand, of course, being me, and said, so what you're telling me is that economic downturns are actually kind of good for the environment. It's like, yeah, well, that's one thing that you could say. President Trump has expressed little interest in fighting climate change. But, you know, I have a relative who says that he's a secret environmentalist. So I'm thinking maybe that's what's going on here.
Really? How
if
is
he
that?
Destroys
how is
our economy, it turns out that that will actually help. So any reprieve for the planet would, of course, be brief. But still, if you had an economy in which these tit-for-tat tariffs were, I love saying that, tit-for-tat tariffs, were to
it's
slow
the
down.
The only way you can get away with saying that on air.
are going to impede progress. It's there would be, at least immediately, carbon emissions would go down. The long-term problem, of course, is that a lot of the clean energy materials that we need to have clean energy and so on are going to be also not be transported in a timely way. But yeah, I mean, well, carbon emissions are a byproduct of basically going places and making things.
Sure, sure.
So, well, yeah. You know. So there you go. There's your upside.
I forget what it was. I read some science fiction novel a long time ago about, you know, some aliens came here or whatever. And they were amazed at how proud humans were of being able to move atoms around.
Yeah.
It was like that was a big thing for humans. And they were kind of like, huh, that's interesting.
So here's some stories. Adidas warns U.S. customers that it expects to raise prices. The weak dollar is an opportunity for the euro. It turns out that world investors, are looking to the stability and predictability of the European Union as a place to possibly park their money.
This all took place in 3 months.
Cuts to federal funding in science. Many are predicting that this will have a long-term negative effect on the economy of the United States, because of course a lot of the product development and the basic ideas behind a lot of product development in the United States are what make us a world leader in these areas. Ports are bracing for pain on the West Coast because of course the China tariffs. U.S. retailers and manufacturers are pausing and reducing shipments. Basically, some of these ships that are bringing stuff over, cargo ships are like half full right now. So on and on, economic downturn pretty much predicted by everybody.
Half full, you're an optimist there.
UPS has said it's going to cut 20,000 jobs because, of course, these levies are reducing shipping volume.
Sure.
Deliveries from China to the U.S. were its most profitable trade lane, yeah. It turns out.
Well, I mean, a lot of this stuff just has ripple effects, they're not buying the products, the UPS lays people off. Yep. Places like, corrugated cardboard manufacturers, yeah. They're going to be laying people off. I mean,
GM says it's going to cost them about $5 billion, just the tariffs that they have on the products that they're putting together. Meanwhile, Trump is cashing in on crypto. So we're really talking about, you were saying earlier, the let them eat cake. I mean, it was like, anybody want a crypto coin with my big, fat, ugly head on it?
Get them before we yank the rug out and the plummets to zero. So, hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT.
All good news today. Oh, good news.
We'll try in the second half. Here,
yeah, we'll try to pep it up a little bit.
Yeah, so you might be listening on the internet at WRTFM.org. You could be listening in the future because we put our shows on the archive section and of the WRT.org, WRTFM.org. And thanks to Mindless Minion D-Cubed, you can listen via podcast. And then we're back on Spotify. We had a little bit of a hiccup with Spotify, but I think we got it all worked out now. So, all right, we're going to take a brief break and then come back with...
Just everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like whatever managed to like... Somewhere it's stuck in the between your teeth of the Trump stuff. We'll dig that out and we'll talk about that.
Get out the floss.
Yes, the news floss.
I have a story on chimpanzees and empathy.
Oh, good.
And a question.
Yeah.
Where did the moon go?
Support for this program comes from WORT's... Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
Attention WORT volunteers and donors. WORT is holding an election for 4 open board seats, 2 participating member seats, and 1 listener sponsor seat to serve 3-year terms, and 1 listener sponsor seat to serve a 2-year term, all 4 terms beginning at the annual meeting in June. The 2-year seat will conclude in June 2027, while the 3-year seats will conclude June 2028. Financial acumen, computer literacy, and a willingness to work with a dynamic group to help shape this great station are all desirable qualifications. People of underrepresented groups are strongly encouraged to apply. Some committee hours are required outside of board meetings. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. on Thursday, May 15th, to ensure consideration. Voting begins on Thursday, May 29th, and continues until the annual meeting on Sunday, June 29th. More information and board applications are available at wortfm.org or on paper in the station lobby. Help us keep WORT a vibrant and important part of our community. Apply today.
Do you have an insatiable curiosity about the world? Do you find yourself provoking conversations with your friends and coworkers? Are you a strong listener? Then you should consider applying to become the next host of A Public Affair, WORT's daily hour-long call-in talk program. We're now accepting applications for this volunteer position. The next host will be the voice of Tuesday's show and join a stellar lineup of folks who engage listeners in conversations on social, cultural, and political issues of importance every day of the week. We're looking for someone who is curious and well-informed, comfortable speaking on air, someone who can think on their feet, and has at least 5 hours a week to prepare and host the show. And of course, we'll need you to be here every Tuesday from 12 to 1 p.m. Apply by May 2nd. To find out more information or apply, go to wortfm.org/talkhost.
So did you celebrate on April 28th?
What was on April 28th?
It was Confederate Memorial Day.
No.
In Alabama. The fourth Monday in April is...
I was probably singing Marching Through Georgia in my shower.
It's a state-recognized holiday.
Oh, Lord.
State offices and courts are closed. Alabama is one of only a few states that have an official holiday recognizing the Confederate soldiers.
Invite a fascist to lunch day.
I guess.
That's where all the trouble began. Hey, I got to tell you that the conclave to elect the next pope is starting on May the 7th. So that's going to be fun. That would be something to see. All the wheeling, all the dealing, all the hookers and blow, you know, the way in which they usually decide these things. No, scores of cardinals. This guy's, these kicky red gowns. I love those things they wear.
Sure.
They look really nice. They're all going to be shut. I like the lace accessories.
You know, what's funny about that is the in nature, the red cardinals, the traditional that when we think of, those are females.
Yeah.
So.
Really?
Yeah, just saying.
Scores of cardinals have been gathering since the Pope's death. There's a big clot of them there.
Big blood clot.
To decide all the details about mourning him, but they're going to meet Tuesday morning, and the politicking is going to start.
Mm.
This was pretty apparent on Monday when the cardinals got together to talk about the church and all the stuff that's going on, that they've got a lot of different views. About 100 of the 130 or so Cardinals participated in the meetings so far, but there's more set to arrive. So two-thirds majority, because, you know, the Holy Spirit only works by two-thirds. It's usually Holy Spirit and God the Father, and Jesus is like, no, there's no way. I'm not going with that guy. So, two-thirds majority.
I thought it was different. I thought the Holy Spirit was always the odd one out.
You think the Holy Spirit was the odd one out?
Because it's so vague. It's like, what the hell is that?
Well, it's a dove.
Yeah, I know. Or it's a little flame, or it's a
flips all over
ghost.
The place.
Yeah. Holy Ghost was cool.
That was better.
That was better marketing. But, you know, like, I can see Jesus and his dad kind of, you know, getting together. Although a lot of times fathers and sons don't agree.
No.
But
they need somebody to break the tie.
So they need to get the dove in there to break the tie.
When the companion and I went to the Church of Sacré-Cœur in Paris, they have this, like, hyper-realistic artwork, like on the nave and on the ceiling and everything, and it's almost like comical. It's like they're showing like the parade of saints, and you see these guys holding their heads under their arms, like soccer balls and stuff like that.
The beheaded ones, really,
people carrying their instruments of death and stuff like that with them. It's just bizarre. But the thing that really creeped me out was they were showing the Holy Trinity just above the altar, and on one side you have God the Father and God the Son, and they basically look like old and young versions of the same dude,
sure.
Right?
Well, it makes sense.
It makes sense, but it's like, okay, when you actually like paint it like that, it makes you realize how creepily weird this idea is. And then they were sort of joining hands, and in the middle was the dove. So I think the dove is like doing some work. I think the dove is like the, you know, the guidance counselor, something like that, kind of helping him out.
Okay,
there.
So what I hear you saying, Yahweh.
I never take out the garbage, right? Exactly. But anyway, it's two-thirds majority. So,
and Yahweh's got that anger issue, too.
Yeah, so he does. Man, you look at that Old Testament. He's so in your face.
And Jesus is like the hippie son that wouldn't take over the family.
Come on, Dad.
He wouldn't take over the family business.
Come on, Dad. Like, knock it off. Yeah.
So anyway, I keep interrupting you.
No big deal. I'm just, I like the riff here. So the conclave must begin 15 to 20 days after the Pope's death.
And okay.
So this one is right in the middle. It's pretty close to the beginning there. It's 16 days after he died. And back in 2013, just to remind people, Francis was elected in 2 days. That's pretty good. But we might go through a lot of ballots this time.
Oh.
Wait and see what's going to happen. So that'll be funny. So conclave, many of you probably know what that means. It means, it comes from Latin, it means with the key. It means they're going to lock them in and make them stay there until they...
And they can't go to the bathroom.
They can't come. They have to come up with somebody.
And they're all old, so it's going to take like 40 minutes.
It's one. Yeah, exactly. It's one way to get them to do it.
So just a couple questions here.
Sure.
You know a lot more about this than I do. Have they confirmed Francis's death yet by hitting him with Maxwell's silver hammer?
I think they did that first of all.
Okay, that's the first thing they did. Okay, so but how does the conclave work? I mean, I know they elect the Pope, but does it have to be one of those cardinals? Or
I don't think it has to be anybody? One of the cardinals, no.
Because, and I hate to say this, but Lindsey Graham said that he thought Donald Trump would be a good Pope. And Trump said he agreed. He would love to be Pope Donald the First. But anyway, that's...
He did say that?
Yeah.
They all say anything.
I know that it's like... But
pardon me while I projectile vomit.
But okay, so how does is there a nomination, or I mean how do they pick candidates? I don't understand quite how that works. They just have like guys they like.
Yeah, they nominate some of the names come forward.
Yeah.
And then they count and they see how many, and then it's kind of, and there's politicking and people are talking with each other and people are seeing which way things are going and so on. Yeah, they basically write the names down on like little, you know, pieces of parchment or whatever, and then they give it to the guy that's running the thing, and then they, you know,
okay.
Figure out what it is.
So then, like, they have one round, and then if, you know...
Yeah, they keep going through different rounds.
Alfred doesn't get any votes, they throw him out.
Right, Alfred. Yeah, there's never been a Pope Alfred. Not yet. They usually take some name that's, you know, traditional, just like monarchs do and things like that. Yeah, so...
Yeah. So I imagine a lot of this is kind of done behind the scenes, really, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's probably blocks and all sorts of, you know, people that have both... I mean, they all have different, you know... basically goals, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them want the church to be more traditional. Some of them would just like more diversity and who it is. I mean, we had a Polish, a German, and an Argentinian Pope all in a row, which is very unusual in the history of the church.
Right.
But I guess you can chalk that up to like, you know, airplane flight, you know.
It's like, it's not a surprise a lot of them are from Italy, right? And it's like, well, there's a guy down the street. I think that's how
he'll fit the hat.
Yeah, it'll take him 2 days in an ox cart to get here anyway, so you know.
Oh, so
got some stories here about lawsuits. That seems like the big way in which we're trying to respond to the Trump administration. So dozens of fired Justice Department lawyers are fighting their dismissal in court. So this is a golden age. You know, the president promised a golden age. This is a golden age for lawyers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It really is. Because with all these lawsuits, these people are really keeping employed. So he's been mass firing, and a lot of the lawyers in the administration, the Justice Department, have been fired. So they're filing a suit to get their jobs back. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting sued the Trump administration just this week. They filed a suit in the U.S. District Court in Washington. The White House had emailed three of the company's five directors telling their positions had been terminated. But, of course, that's against the law, like everything else. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is not a government entity, and its board members are not government officers, said the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Because CPB is not a federal agency subject to the president's authority, we have filed a lawsuit to block the firing. So he's trying to fire people that don't even work for the government.
Yeah.
There's also a
lawsuit. I'm sure this wasn't in retaliation, but there was an executive order about
to get rid of him.
Get rid of funding for PBS and NPR and stuff.
There's a lawsuit that seeks to block ICE from schools and churches. It's a lawsuit was brought by the Justice Action Center and the Innovation Law Lab. And it follows efforts by Immigration and Customs Enforcement people to step up deportations by actually going into churches. And you may remember a few weeks ago, I think it was the Quakers had a suit that was going through, and they'd want to stay. Immigration officials carried out mass arrests over the weekend and ensnared about 800 people in Florida. And a growing number, of course, just like the first time that Trump was president, are children.
Wow. So this week, the White House held a press briefing that was a little bit different.
Okay.
It was for a bunch of what they call new media, which were right-wing influencers, because, you know, they can't actually engage with somebody who will ask them a real question. So they bring
What's your favorite color?
So they brought one of the influencers at this event was named Cambry Nelson. She's an ambassador, whatever that means, for the American First Policy Institute. And she was one of the several individuals who could participate in this new media event. And the thing is, last October, Cambry thought the moon had disappeared. She was posting to her followers in October. She had spent the last 7 days looking for the moon to no avail. Has anyone seen the moon lately? She asked. Yeah. I've been looking for 7 days.
Oh my God!
One of her followers responded that they couldn't find the moon either, and were convinced that it had disappeared.
Sure.
And she replied, "It has. Why is everybody silent about this?" She also argued that the sun had become suspiciously white in color. I think they would like that at the time. Apparently, conspiracy theorists think the sun changed from being yellow back in the day. Yeah. So
we keep saying this. How far back are they going? So they're going back beyond the Babylonians. 6,000 years ago, human beings knew that the moon went through phases. Now, they weren't sure who was going around who. Now, we've got to give them that.
Yeah. Who was driving the chariot?
Who was driving the chariot? But they knew what was going on 6,000 years ago. So I guess we got our outer limit now of where we are with this madness.
No, I think that Cambry just has a little trouble with permanence. I mean, wait until, if I ever meet her.
Peekaboo!
I'm stealing her nose.
Okay, yeah.
She could post about that for months. Like, have you seen my nose? This guy in Madison took my nose.
Yeah. Some terrible liberal. Watch out for the liberal nose stealers.
Well, for some reason that reminded me. We made the cut for the Best of Madison.
Liberal no-stealer category.
That's in the liberal no-stealer category. No, in the best radio team or something. We got a we got a little email that we were in the finals, the final, I don't know what, five or something.
Yeah,
And then, you know, and I don't really want to, you know, give any credence to these rumors that Jonathan and Kitty are eating pets. But so we really don't want to talk about that. But
I think we'd be good if we had like a greased pig competition. I think we could get in there.
We'd do good.
Get that pig.
Yeah. Well, you grew up in the South.
That pig would not stand a chance.
Oh, wait a minute. That reminds me, if I can find this story about the South, you will...
I will laugh knowingly.
Oh, let's see. Life expectancy.
Oh, yeah. 12. Oh, no, wait. That's the age of consent. Only if you're cousins. Yeah, right.
Life expectancy in southern states has changed little for Americans born from 1900 to 2000.
I know.
So in 100 years, we've in the South made virtually no progress as far as life expectancy.
Yep, we're two countries. At least two.
So you may have heard that colleges and universities are breaking their silence now. Apparently Harvard was kind of like broke the logjam on this. And there was a 400 campus leaders sent a letter to the administration saying that they, you know, higher ed was under assault and, you know, this isn't something they should not be doing and so on. Apparently there was a letter that came back. I was a little ambivalent about the letter that came back and described these leaders, presidents and provosts and so on as overpaid blowhards. And I have to say, I wasn't against that either. It's like, yeah, there's a little bit of overpaid blowhardism out there. But see, that's the problem. The Republicans sometimes do diagnose genuine problems in our society.
Sure.
Only to offer the most ridiculous solution to that problem. You know, the problem of, you know, higher ed being so expensive and it being kind of scammy in various ways. I know from the belly of the beast. But I mean, so the answer is to what? Just turn it into like basically re-education camps for right-wing crazies? I mean, I don't think that's the answer.
This bathwater's cold. Let's throw it out.
Exactly.
I always remember we got a press release here one time from some tax cutting group, and I think they're in Washington there, and they were trying to make an issue out of the fact that at the University of Madison that they had this incredibly highly paid and what they were kind of positioning it as like some, you know, pointy-headed academic that was getting all this money.
Highest academic salary or whatever?
Yeah, the highest salary. And they were getting paid this ridiculous.
Can you believe that?
Yeah. And the guy they were talking about was Barry Alvarez.
Of course it was. That's the real dirty secret if you want to know. I mean, like how much money goes into crap like that.
But they had no idea. They said, look how much money this Barry Alvarez is getting from the University of Wisconsin. Yeah, it's like, we know. Yeah, we love football. Yeah. So.
And all those assistant deputy vice chancellors. Forget about them.
So chimpanzees.
Oh, yeah.
Chimpanzees are more empathetic than previously presumed.
Okay.
Chimpanzees...
How empathetic were they? Was it?
Well, they didn't think.
Was it one Trump or one Trump empathy?
Something like that. They would laugh at you if like a boulder fell on you. Set somebody on fire. It's like, oh, that's funny. Yeah, and so, no, they comfort each other when in distress.
Sure.
They've typically been referred to as violent and despotic when compared to other apes.
Yeah.
Researchers at Durham University found that chimps were as likely to console each other as bonobos, even though the latter is typically considered the more empathetic primate.
We actually share more of our DNA with bonobos than we do with the regular chimpanzees.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's about 98% for the regular, and it's 99%. It's very close for bonobos. One thing about bonobos, too, is that they actually have different-looking faces for one another. You can tell they're more social creatures because, like us, their faces are very unique. They don't all look very similar.
Oh, interesting.
They have a more recessed brow so that their faces can be more plastic in terms of the interaction with others. But I just saw an article that came out, actually, about them and the
a journal called Communications Biology, and they were saying about bonobos that one of the reasons why, and this might be a lesson for us hairless primates, one of the reasons why their society is peaceful is because the female bonobos get together in gangs and beat the crap out of any male bonobos that misbehave. Yeah, it's a complete matriarchy, and the whole idea is they're like, okay, that one is really getting out of control. Ladies, we got to step in on this one. And so that's how they keep control in their society.
I'm getting a picture of the Monty Python women with the handbags beating somebody up.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me, Ruth Buzzy died today. Right?
Speaking of nice jump. Oh, that's too bad. I loved her. She was hysterically funny.
She was good. I mean, she had some small roles in movies and TV shows after that. She was always had a nice little character actor kind
of vibe. I first saw her on That Girl. She was one of Marlo Thomas's character's friends, actually.
No, I don't remember.
In the first season. She was only in the first season, I think. But yeah, she was one of her buddies.
Bed bugs appear to have a genetic resistance to pesticides.
Oh, of course they do.
I only brought this in to annoy you.
Yeah. The giant bed bug Republican conspiracy that I dream of every night.
It's a mutation among bed bugs that help them survive the chemicals that they're doused with. So it's now becoming pretty common in the typical bed bug.
Oh, wovwe. I'm gonna go visit my aunt this summer, and Columbus used to be ground zero for bed bugs.
Oh, right, right.
I have no idea if that's still true, but every time I go there, I assume I'm going to get getting bed bugs. So I put all my luggage like up on stilts somewhere. The nice thing is they don't stay on your body. You know, I mean, if you can keep your affects away from the bed, then you just have to worry about them biting you. But they're very nervous. They get on you, they bite you, and then they run back. And the famous thing, they do breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's the famous thing where they usually bite you like three bites in a row because they don't want to sit in one place too long. So they'll bite, they'll move a little bit, they'll bite again, then they'll move a little bit and bite again. So, they usually go back into the, you don't want to get them in your house though, of course, that's obviously the case. But if you're traveling, it's thing to do is just make sure that your luggage and don't leave books next to your bed and things like that because they'll get into the pages of books and things too. In fact, our Madison library here had problems with that at one point.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. Yep. So, but this is according to Orkin, which cities have the most bed bugs?
We're looking at
Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Cleveland, Akron, L.A., Detroit, D.C., Indianapolis, Charlotte, Champaign. Yeah, Champaign's in the top 10. Oh, the other ones are like New York Chicago. I don't see Columbus.
You don't see Columbus? Oh, that's great. I'm happy to hear that because when that first started, you know, when they first started reemerging, that was a hot spot.
Yeah.
So that's good.
I like this one. It's number 35, Las Vegas, and then in parentheses, new to list. So it's 35 with a bullet there.
The two places I've had bed bug bites were in Columbus, and it was at a high-end place. The places that we normally stay, I was tardy in making reservations. I had to go to a more expensive place. There was like a big game in town or something was happening.
Sure.
So we had to go to a more expensive place, and I got bed bugs there. And the other time, and again, was a very high-end place, was an Aspen, of all places. Companion went there for a conference, and I got bed bugs there. So it was more associated, interestingly enough, with like level of travel than it was with is this a nice hotel or not a nice hotel?
Yeah.
Nice hotels have bed bugs, so don't be fooled. Hey, the Mellon Foundation on Tuesday announced it's going to put $15 million in emergency funding into state humanities councils across the country. And this is great because it means it's because of the cancellation of the federal support. They're going to basically try to support these things that the feds are no longer going to be supporting. The new funding, which will support humanities councils in 50 states and 6 jurisdictions, comes a month after the National Endowment for the Humanities abruptly cut off funding for the councils, as well as existing grants, almost all of the existing grants. So the endowment had a $207 million budget last fiscal year, and it's the nation's largest public funder of the humanities, which includes museums, historical sites, cultural festivals, community projects, and so on.
The largest structure in the universe may be 50% larger than we thought. It's a thing called the Hercules Corona Borealis Great Wall. It's a cluster of galaxies previously estimated to be about 10 billion light years long.
Mm.
And new research indicates it could be 15 billion light years long.
It doesn't mean anything to me.
And Leon's getting larger.
Exactly. Is that the thing that the Enterprise ran into when they were trying to get out of the galaxy?
Could be.
The fact that it's a wall kind of makes me think maybe that's it.
I have trouble wrapping my head around the idea of galaxies. It's like just, okay, I get like solar systems and stuff. You know, there's a sun and the planets go around it. But then to expand, and this is a limitation of my brain, but it's like, okay, so that's happening with stars too? Yeah. They're all kind of in a place and they're rotating or whatever.
You just got to step back.
I guess. Oh, now I see it.
Yeah, right.
All right, we got to get out of here. Time to declare. The weekend. Enjoy the rest of No Pants Day and celebrate as you tradition in the traditional way, of course.
Yeah, celebrate your pantslessness.
Yeah. So, but Pants, was great to see you.
You too.
Have a great week, everybody. Stick around. The Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks for You with the Real Jaguar, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues, Friday on My Mind, all kinds of great stuff here on your favorite radio station, WORT. And you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison. It's just about 2 o'clock. And as I said, stick around for the Kiosk. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, May 2nd.
This is Bird Note.
I don't go for fancy cars.
No, no.
For diamond rings or movie stars.
No, no, no.
I go for penguins. Penguin.
There's just something about penguins. Pleasantly plump, they stand upright and teeter like toddlers. Penguins really are endearing. 18 different penguin species occupy the southern hemisphere. They range in size from the 4-foot-tall emperor penguins of Antarctica to the petite 1-foot-tall little penguins of Australia and New Zealand. Though often depicted in basic black and white, most penguins are more colorful. 7 species have long, jaunty, golden feather tufts above their eyes. The largest, king and emperor penguins, have necks that glisten gold. The little penguin is blue and white. Penguin ancestry dates back at least 60 million years. One species of ancient penguin stood nearly 5 feet tall, weighed as much as a human being, and had a long, vicious-looking bill. So maybe they weren't all cute, but as Lyle Lovett sings,
penguins are so sensitive. Penguins are so sensitive. Penguins are so